Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that really matter. In the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And in the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
Welcome to the Hurricane Harvey of talk shows. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. On today's show, the generals have taken over the White House. There were three factions in the White House before, the Bannon wing, the Democrat wing, and the military wing. And guess who's getting pushed out? We'll be talking about that in round one. In the second round, the ACLU has caved in on free speech. Meanwhile, there's another rally set for San Francisco this weekend. What could possibly go wrong? We'll be discussing that in the second round. Finally, we'll be doing our regularly scheduled weekend wrap-up. The last segment of the week, we'll talk about some of the signature stories that we talk about, the Awan brothers, the Ukraine DNC story, and other things we've discussed, all that and more on the most disruptive radio show in America. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. How you doing today, Garland?
Oh, I am just wonderful here, ending the week out on a good note.
Yeah, now, speaking of good
well,
note.
Well, I'm not in Houston. That's why
I was going to say.
It's
yeah,
a wet note if you're in Houston.
If you're in Louisiana, you know, I even worry about Louisiana more. I will tell you this. So we have Hurricane Harvey. And by the way, I can make a joke about it now because it hasn't hit yet.
Yeah.
So those Hurricane Harvey jokes, that might not age well.
Yeah, I was thinking in the next 36 to 48, however, in the next 36 to 48 hours, all jokes related to like hurricanes and things like that are just going to be.
Yeah. And of course, we, you know, it's something to keep an eye on, obviously. I worry about Louisiana, obviously, frankly, more than Texas, because Louisiana's underwater already. That being said, the hardest rain I've ever seen in my life, I've lived in Austin, I've lived in Dallas, is in Texas. And this is, you know, Category 3 hurricane. It looks serious.
It's been 12 years. And since we had a 2005, I think, was the last time we had a Category 3 hurricane hit the U.S.
Yeah, and so it'll be very, very interesting to see how this plays out. It's one of those things where, again, you know, right now the political issue is people are asking whether the Trump administration is ready to take this on. I got to tell you, we'll talk about this in the second round. This is one of those areas where I think the military people being in charge actually might work to Trump's advantage. Does that make sense?
The only thing is John Kelly was head of DHS, Department of Homeland Security, which has Coast Guard and FEMA, I'm pretty sure, under it. And so that means they've got someone in charge, but, you know, they had a general in charge of all of it. Now he's not in charge of it. Whether it's good or I don't know whether that makes it work or not.
Yeah, no, it's.
I'm just throwing that, just saying that's something a lot of people might not know. They don't have a DHS person right now.
Yeah, it's also hard to say. Also, and this is a weird one we're not going to talk about today, but it's worth mentioning that Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, there's a headline that he spent about $30,000 on makeup.
If you're in France, that's a bargain.
Okay, there
you
go.
If you really think about it.
That's
if you're
good.
In Paris, that's a good month. For a guy in France.
Now, speaking of makeup, if you like watching radio, see what I did there? If you like watching radio, be sure to check us out on Facebook. Go to the Sputnik Facebook page. Also, if you go to my Twitter or my Periscope, which is @Stranahan, my last name, you can watch us on Periscope. We put the segments up. We have a growing audience on both Facebook and Periscope. Feel free to leave comments. Tell other people about it. Let's get into it. Let's start to talk about some of the topics we have scheduled for today. By the way, I'm going to tease you again. We have a big announcement, right, Garland?
Big, big things coming up. So you got to listen to the show every minute and every second for who knows how long until we make the big announcement. It'll probably be in a week or two.
But I'm not fooling.
It is a major announcement.
It is a major announcement. And if you're a fan of the show, you're really going to like it. And if you're not a fan of the show, I don't know why you're listening. Unless you're spying.
You're trying taking to find notes. I'm sure there's some
Russia
not so
stuff.
Fan of the shows who are taking notes, just waiting for us to say something that they can use to viciously attack us.
So a few months ago, Garland, I did a Periscope on my own, as I'm wont to do. And I tried to explain to people the breakdown in the White House. And this is when Steve Bannon was still in there and a lot of the other Bannon, you know, Reince Priebus, remember the Halcyon days.
Yeah, right.
Sean Spicer, right? And I tried to explain. And I'll tell you why I did it, Garland, because, as you know, I used to be the lead investigative reporter at Breitbart, and I saw Breitbart getting the story wrong. Matt Boyle, who's the Washington bureau chief, was trying to get, he doesn't like Reince Priebus. And he was trying to say there was a split between Bannon and Reince Priebus. And I said at the time, no, that's not the case. Here's the wings. There's the Bannon faction. There's the Gary Cohn, Jared Kushner, Dina Powell faction, who Bannon referred to as the New York Democrats. So let's just call
Wall
them that.
Street, whatever you want to. And like somebody like me would refer him to as the
Goldman
Wall Street
Sachs.
Contingent. Yeah,
right.
The Goldman Sachs crew.
Then there's the, but let's remind you, and I'm not doing this for no reason, that Gary Cohn, it's going to be important in a minute.
Yeah.
Gary Cohn is a registered Democrat, and that's going to be important in a minute. It's not for reasons you'll see. But I told people at the time, the third faction is what I would call the military wing or the deep state wing or whatever. And here's what's happened. So the Bannon wing is being pushed out. Steve Bannon's gone. Reince is gone. Spicer's gone. And Reince,
and sadly, even Mooch is gone.
And even Mooch is gone. Now these guys, Reince and Spicer, are establishment Republicans, but they kind of allied with Bannon on this stuff. Now what's happening, and here's what's interesting, is the Democrat wing is being pushed out. Now, here's why I mentioned that Cohn's a Democrat. Because he's been under intense pressure since Charlottesville to criticize Trump from his Democrat friends. Does that make sense? In other words, because he's a New York Democrat, a lot of his friends are pushing him. And who's benefiting from this? McMaster, Kelly, and the other military people.
I got to throw in this, too, and I think that in reading several stories, there are a lot of people who are from the, he's been getting a lot of pressure from the Jewish community also. Mm-hmm. And that because of the whole Nazi thing going on, there was a lot of people in the Jewish community saying, hey, you need to leave. So the bottom line is he's been getting a lot of pressure to leave.
Well, and I've said that before. When you look at the white nationalists who were there, even people like David Duke, they spend a lot more time talking about Israel than they do about black folks. They just do. And so the upshot from Charlottesville has been this stuff about Confederate monuments. You'd think that these were just anti-black racist groups. Yeah, not so much. In other words, yes, there's that aspect of it. But the anti-Israel stuff is really more of a focus. Now, again, I'm just trying to, I'm definitely not taking an advocacy position when I say that. I'm not trying to defend them. I'm not trying to do anything. I'm saying if you go to the sites, if you look at what they're talking about, and I pointed this out before, most of these groups are pro-Palestinian. David Duke's very pro-Palestinian.
Well, the thing you look at is a lot of these groups are, you know, you can, you know, kind of parse out who it is. But in a nutshell, you sum it up to people that aren't like us, they don't like. And, you know, that's not
no,
pretty
I don't,
much.
No, I don't
they're anti-Muslim. Yeah, they're anti-black. They're anti-Jewish. I mean, that's pretty much.
I don't.
They're
I
not the, you know, the Latinos.
Opposed to being sloppy. To being sloppy. If you talk about groups like let's talk about the New Black Panther Party or Farrakhan. Let's talk about the Nation of Islam. Let's use them. Nation of Islam has a anti-Semitic element to it, right?
Yes, it does.
And so therefore, if you're defining Nation of Islam, I don't think it's fair to say, well, they just don't like people who aren't like them. I prefer to be more precise. And by the way, the Nation of Islam would not, because I've talked to people from the Nation of Islam, they don't even like the term anti-Semitic. That's not a term they like. They break that down and they go, well, if you look at what a Semite is.
Parsing words is getting into semantics. But the bottom line is this. I mean, the bottom line is the Nazis, the white supremacists are pretty much, they're anti-Jew, they're anti-black, they're anti-Muslim. But and when it comes back to Cohn, here's what happens. So Cohn gets a lot of pressure. And so he's getting a lot of pressure from the Jewish community, from a lot of his friends back home to say, hey, you need to get out of there. So what happens? there is speculation as to whether or not he's leaving or not. There is some kind of a little bit of wiggling going on in the market. There's a little bit of a depression going on in the market. There's, you know, there's the question of whether or not he's going to leave. There are some people who are involved in the market who are worried about that, so that he sees things wiggle a little bit. And according to Cohn, he says he's going to stay because he's patriotic and he feels that his country needs him. Additionally, so he said a couple of things. He says he's patriotic and his country needs him. And not in those exact words, I'm paraphrasing, but he did mention patriotic. He said that he wants to get the tax cut, which, you know, as a left leaning person, you know, it kind of angers me, saying, geez, you're going to stick around there just so you can shaft the working class people again, just so you can give giant tax cuts to corporations and the millionaires. I'd rather see you leave if that's what you're there to accomplish. And then. And so that's where he was coming from. And then he ended up saying, no, Nazi's going to run me out. I understand. Oh, there's another thing. So, and this is huge. So in February, Janet Yellen's term as the chairman of the Federal Reserve is up. And there is great speculation that Gary Cohn will be nominated as, you know, the new chair of the Federal Reserve. And there are many people that believe he has his eye on that position and he's kind of sticking around, which raises the question, you know, it's like, if you feel morally that you shouldn't be there, if you feel like, if, I mean, I'm not saying it's my position one way or the other, because I'm not Jewish and I'm not hearing what he hears from his community. So I'm not judging Gary Cohn in any way on his decision. I'm simply saying, if you feel morally that you're not, well, I shouldn't be here, but I'm here because I want to get taxes, you know, make sure I get taxes for me and my other millionaire, billionaire buddies. And oh, by the way, there's a position that I'd really love to have my hands on. I just think that's an immoral thing. I'm not saying that's what it is, but those are two things that have been cited. And if you're going to leave for moral reasons, leave. But if you're going to stick around because you want something in it for you, I think that's not a strong moral position to take.
Well, let me give you some inside information, too.
Oh, we didn't mention what he said. Let me find it. He said, Anita's, that the White House can and must do better in consistently condemning hate groups. So he didn't say much. Let's face it, he didn't say really much. You know, at first I thought, well, he condemned Trump and boy, that's going to be bump heads. But really, it wasn't. You know what I mean? It wasn't like,
well, here's the other thing that's interesting.
Threw down the gauntlet by any stretch of the imagination.
I will tell you, this is inside information. I did not get this from Bannon, but I got it from someone else. So. Cohn hurt himself a couple months ago, right before the Paris climate change discussions. And the way he did that is the one way for sure to get into trouble with Donald Trump, which is to speak for Donald Trump. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You remember at the time Cohn did an interview and he came out and he said, well, the president's probably going to, you know, come
stick
around.
Stick it out. Yeah.
That did not go over well with Donald Trump. That did not go over well. And again, that's an inside source. And you can see, it's provable, you can see that his influence has dropped. Now, the other guy whose influence is dropping, interestingly, is Kushner. While a lot of this is going on, Kushner's over trying to do these Middle Eastern peace talks, which don't seem to be going anywhere.
Good luck with that.
But here's the point I want to make about the military. I think, you know, I've talked before. I said people who are interested in populism, people who are interested, I've said to you before, Garland, Bernie supporters need to watch how Trump's been co-opted, because the same thing could happen to Bernie. Here's the other thing that's interesting about it, though. The Democrats, it's almost like, I'm not so Machiavellian to think the generals did this on purpose, but it's the way it's worked out. The generals aren't under political pressure because they're supposed to be above politics to speak out on the Charlottesville thing. So a guy like Cohn, he's getting a lot of pressure that a general, who's going to pressure a general?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. People almost view the generals and military people like machines, you know, like these are people that have no emotions. They're, you know, they're androids and they come in here, which is far from the case. Well, here's something that you might find interesting. The new White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, is moving to impose complete control over the flow of documents to Donald Trump's desk. This is according to Politico. In a conference last week, Kelly initiated a new policymaking process in which he and one other aide, who's a White House staff secretary named Rob Porter, They will review all documents that cross the Resolute desk. What they want to do, they want to ensure that the president won't see any external policy documents, internal policy memos, agency memos, and even news articles that haven't been vetted. So it's what we talk about. The generals, when the generals come in, they
That's already been happening, by the way. Trump is increasingly isolated. And again, this is inside information. Trump has increasingly been isolated in the information he gets. For instance, they are stopping news articles from non-established sources. So news articles from InfoWars or Breitbart or whatever. And again, I'm not saying that's all he should be reading. I'm saying as soon as you say you can't read an article from this outlet, you see what I'm saying?
I do think this, though, and I think part of it is the president himself, and I'll tell you why. Because if the guy's there and you see him, you know, and you see him, you know, reacting, it's one thing when a person, like, reads this article and that article and they kind of, like, you know, determine, you know, this one's junk, you know, that one's good. But when you see the president reacting, overreacting to articles, an InfoWars article, you know, you turn on InfoWars, you're going to get some space alien stuff and you're going to get some stuff that maybe is worth reading. But if you see the president...
Technically, it's lizard people. It's not space aliens. So.
But if you see the person overreacting, it may get to a point where they say, look, they got the president bouncing all over the wall and we got to narrow it down to stuff that's...
I don't agree with that. I got to say...
I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
InfoWars is a lot better than Mother Jones. InfoWars is a lot better than The Atlantic. InfoWars is a lot better than the approved publications. And they're a lot better than Washington Post and New York
Certainly
Times.
Certainly, in your opinion, they are. And I respect that everybody has their opinion. In my opinion, by far, it's not. But I think if the president is overreacting to stuff, you might say, you know what? This guy's just...
It's not overreacting. You got to understand, this is the establishment agenda. And the reason they don't want him to read InfoWars, for instance, is that InfoWars might give him information that might make him go, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing on this? And that also might let him see, hey, but look, I know people who used to talk to Trump and they're having trouble getting through to him. And they think they described to me before the speech happened what we saw. I'm going to tell you what I was told. And again, I want to be clear, not from Bannon.
We're running out of time. I just want to make a quick comment.
But they said it was like Trump was drugged, and it's the way he was talking in that Afghan
speech.
And
I just think there are some people in his administration and outside of his administration that think that he hasn't been acting in a stable manner. And I think there's people that feel that they have to either protect him from himself or protect other people from his instability. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I don't believe it at all.
I believe the instability thing is
a lie put forward by the establishment. Completely. It's a lie put forward to the establishment to try to keep him in line. We will be back. We'll be talking about more of the stories that really matter. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan here on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C. All right. The ACLU has made some decisions about how and when they will support various First Amendment activities. And we've got a big rally going on in San Francisco. It's going to be tomorrow at the waterfront at Chrissy Field Park from 2 to 5 p.m. 2 to 5 p.m. A lot of discussion. Lee and I are going to talk about that. We'll start off talking about the ACLU. And in the interest of transparency, I must start by saying I am on the National Board of Directors for the ACLU. However, I don't speak for the ACLU and I don't pretend to speak for the ACLU. I can speak as a board
member.
Can I
speak for them?
I can give you my opinion. Well, no, you're not even a board member, for God's sake.
Okay.
You can speak about them and at them. So let's start with that. And there's been a lot of discussion about Charlotte and about who we will represent and who we won't represent. And basically the ACLU, as I believe, you know, I've seen a lot of things on discussion boards. There's been a lot of discussion. So I don't know that there is a formal written policy on it. As I see it, as I understand the direction that we're going, you notice I'm making this fuzzy as possible. The direction that we're going is that if there are going to be any types of weapons involved, the ACLU will not represent the a group that, you know, for instance, there's open carry states and you say, okay, well, we're going to do this and there's going to be an open carry. Well, we're not going to do it. Basically, the ACLU is not going to, you know, oppose someone's First Amendment rights. But the ACLU, number one, and let me start here real quick. The ACLU only has a certain amount of resources. I mean, they don't have a trillion lawyers. So they have to, I've been on what's called a case review committee before on the ACLU, because you have people all day long sending letters saying, hey, come represent me for this, that. I was fired. I was beat up. I was whatever. And the ACLU has to review them and determine which case to take. I was on a case review committee before in Maryland. And they're just saying they'll be discerning. If the ACLU, somebody comes and says, represents us, and the ACLU looks and says, ah, you're going to be carrying weapons. Yeah, we're not going to represent that case. You go forward on your own, however you see fit, find your own representation, but we don't want to do that. So the ACLU, you can condemn them. They're not opposing free speech. Every organization, particularly a legal organization, has the right to choose who they want to represent. And if they feel that there's a possibility that they're representing someone that could end up in some violent activity, they can say, we don't want to be involved in that. All right, Lee, let me hear it from you.
Well, look, the ACLU, like, you know, we talked about Gary Cohn last time. The ACLU is getting a lot of pressure. And I'm going to give credit to a publication I don't usually give credit to, because I think this is the right way. They did publish this to their credit, which is The Atlantic wrote a piece the other day called The Most Short-Sighted Attack on Free Speech in Modern U.S. History. And they quote people like Charles W. Cook, and who wrote in the New York Times, he cautioned the ACLU against what he called a narrow reading of the First Amendment. Now, that first off, that's dangerous. As soon as you start talking about a narrow reading, that's exactly
what you want. It is broad. The fact of the matter is, yes, someone like me, you want the First Amendment to be as broad as possible.
And the reason you want it, and the reason I'm a free speech purist on this stuff, as much as you can be. I should have got the quote. I'll do the quote, but it's going to sound like I'm making it up. But I should have pulled the quote. The reason I'm a free speech purist is because whatever your beliefs are, if you don't think they're going to come for you, guess again. Right?
Yeah, always. Sooner or later, they're always going to get back to you.
In other words, even if we grant some of the premises that the left is doing, I mean, here's the thing about Charlottesville. A, let's go over this. Whatever the beliefs of the people who were talking, the white nationalists, whatever you want to call it, the people at the Unite the Right rally, whatever you call them, they had a permit. That permit, with the help of the ACLU, was upheld by a federal judge. But the point is, if someone had represented them, the judge would have ruled probably the same way. Does that make sense? He ruled in the merits. He didn't go, oh, well, it's the ACLU, so I'm going to give you that. They had a permit. That permit was pulled illegally by Terry McAuliffe, apparently. That's apparently what happened. So let's just stop right there. I don't care whether it's white nationalist or black nationalist, or communist, or fascist, or libertarians, or greens, or Republicans, or Democrats. When a federal judge says, yes, you have the right to speak here, right? That's done. And the governor of the state comes in and decides differently at the last second. That's part of what caused the problem. It is literally part of what caused the problem, because the police marched them out and then they were attacked.
Well, there's so many facets to it. I mean, you didn't have a division. You've got to divide protesters,
right,
and counter-protesters.
Yes.
And there had to be like a phalanx of officers. There had to be barriers between. There were so many things there. It was a plethora. It was like doing after. We did after-action reports in law enforcement. I was in law enforcement. And the after-action report should be like everything you do wrong.
Yeah.
That causes problems.
And so when that happens, the ACLU was on the right side. But then what happened is,
the ACLU is always on the right side.
The people,
dude.
No, not always.
Always
but
on the right
The people
side.
On the left, what they did was they started attacking the ACLU. And you saw this, Garland.
Oh, yeah.
And that is crazy. It is crazy and is short-sighted. But I got to tell you, I saw it when I, you know, Andrew Breitbart, my friend Andrew Breitbart, when he was attacked in the Shirley Sherrod thing, that was a pure free speech issue. because she was a government official. And whatever you think about government officials, the big free speech case was New York Times v. Sullivan. New York Times v. Sullivan specifically said journalists need leeway to criticize government officials.
Absolutely.
And the reason they need that leeway is, and they need a little bit of slop. In other words, you need to not be deliberately dishonest and not show malice. But it's the way the courts rule
when it comes to like a police report. When a police officer writes a report, the courts basically say, you know, like you could say, well, he didn't use a comma and he should have used, something else besides a comma and, you know, a semicolons. Therefore, it means something different. And basically the courts have ruled, look, it's the intent there. It doesn't have to be perfect as long as the intent there was to do the right thing.
So and it's why police get off in cases where they've shot somebody a vast majority of the times. It's part of why. It's because, again, it's the idea that, look.
It's the interpretation of Tennessee versus Garner. Tennessee versus Garner is we're getting way off. But Tennessee versus Garner is the Supreme Court case that rules when it's possible, when it's okay for a police officer to use lethal force. And then the question is how that's interpreted. And it's been interpreted from the perspective of was the officer in fear for his life? And to me, it's gotten so broad that an officer can almost say, well, you know, I feared he was going to turn into a werewolf and tear me apart. And the courts will say, okay, that's fine. In my opinion, it's gotten so broad that there is no standard anymore. But that being said,
I want to get back to the ACLU
because I do want to talk about the rally also.
Well, here's what's happened. Let's talk about the rally. Let's talk about that. Here's my fear about the rally. That we saw this in Boston last weekend. What they've done, and the leftist thugs in ninja suits, you can call them Antifa or Antifa. I don't understand the pronunciation, Antifa. They're anti-fascist. They're not anti-fascist, right? They're not fascist.
I don't even know how that works.
So I don't know how it works either. I first was reporting on the Antifa.
So their ideology is 100% right. It's just that their methods of violence is wrong. They're on the money. You got to be anti-fascist, but, you know, the methods of violence. But again,
they are fascist.
They are, for the most part, it is the anarchist. And the anarchists are a pain in the neck for the left. In the same way, I would say this. In the same way that people who are conservatives, who are decent, upstanding citizens, find these Nazis and far-right kooks a real pain in the butt for them, the same way the anarchists are a pain in the butt for people.
Well, I would argue, and I don't want to get off on a tangent on this where we argue and I beat my head against the table. But I've got to say, I'm just going to say this, and you can argue, and we can talk about it some other time. There is a 100% clear history of the left, including mainstream Democrats, lying and covering up violence for these supposedly fringe elements over and over and over again. And it goes back to the 60s, and it's completely provable.
Well, the good thing about the far right is you don't have to lie and cover it up. It's so obvious that, you know, nobody could, you know.
No, nobody. You don't
nobody
see.
Nobody could possibly you cover don't see, up far right wing violence. It's so obvious. It's so glaring out there.
And the difference is the far leftists are celebrated and let in, and they're part. That's why I say this idea that it's the alt left. It's not the alt left. It's the
left. You're right. It's not the alt left. It's the anarchy.
No, it's the left.
At least we both agree that it's not the alt left. I don't alt no, left is a term that was made up that doesn't mean anything.
It's not
anyway.
The alt left. It's the left itself.
It's
Democrats,
the anarchists.
People like Jerry Brown, for instance. I can give example after example, but I don't want to get off on a tangent.
Yeah, because I don't care who they are. It's not what we call them. It's what they do. I oppose violence, and I don't care who does it. That's why I agree. That's why I'm on the board with the ACLU. You know what? You said the left is mad at the ACLU. Actually, about 90% of the time, the right is angry at the ACLU. The other 10% of the time, the left. Like when we...
No, I agree with that.
About 10% of the time, the left is mad at the ACLU. About 90% of the time,
and you say,
the right is
you
like,
say you,
oh, we don't like the views of the people that you're protecting. And we're like,
you
yeah,
say,
well,
you say if you say you oppose violence, but if I were to ask you, do you condemn cop killer Mumia Abu-Jamal, what would you say?
What are you talking about? Do I condemn? I don't know the story of him well enough to speak on it.
I don't know the story of him well enough to speak on it.
I mean, yeah. I don't know that he killed anybody. I don't
know
the story.
Well, he did.
The
jury found him guilty of killing somebody. But that's what I'm saying. And I could
I haven't researched it.
I could go through a list of people and
But what good would it do? But what good would it do for me, for Garland, to condemn or not condemn someone? I oppose violence. I condemn violence.
No, so but you don't you condemn it specifically, and you're doing what the left does. This is exactly...
If you bring violence to me, I condemn it.
Yeah,
and I condemn, always condemn violence.
Watch this. Ask me if I condemn Timothy McVeigh. Go ahead.
Why would I ask you if you condemn?
Ask me.
I would expect that you would condemn murder of 300 and some people.
Yeah, Mumiyal Jamal
ask you something ridiculous like that.
Mumiyal Jamal is a cop killer. He's a convicted
cop killer. I'll have to look into it. If he's killed look, if he killed a cop, which I haven't read, I don't know anything about him.
Okay.
But if he killed a cop, then I opposed killing a cop, and I oppose him or anybody else killing a cop. First of all, there's no ideology to murder to me.
Yes, there is. He's a leftist. No, he was a member
no
of the Black
ideology
Panthers.
To murder is murder.
Yes, there is. Yes, sir. There's a reason the Black Panthers killed 15-plus police officers in a three-year period.
To a person.
There's a reason the Black Liberation Army killed so many cops.
Are you opposed to murder no matter who does it?
I'm opposed. Yes, absolutely.
Well, then there's no ideology for murder for you either.
No, no. Right.
But
not for me, but for the left, there is.
If this guy killed, we got to, what is it? Charles Manson's a bad guy, but this
guy's a leftist.
And this guy's a good guy.
Yes, he's a leftist. This is all political violence on the left.
Murder is political to you. Murder is not political.
No. Political murder is political.
Murder is murder.
No, it's not murder. Murder is not murder. Political murder is political murder.
Well, you're someone who's
killing cops. Because their philosophy is off the pigs, which was what the Black Panthers' philosophy is. That's a political statement.
Or somebody who's killing Jews because their belief is off the Jews, which is what the Nazis are. Somebody who's killing black people because there's
a hang
the black people because
that's
what the KKK are. I oppose it, but I don't oppose somebody. You know what? I don't oppose some guy who walks up and kills somebody because he's a random murderer either.
Me neither.
I'm opposed to murder, and you should be. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But not every murder is political. But
it's still a murder, isn't it?
So when Angela Davis's guns were used in the Marin County courthouse takeover by Jonathan Jackson, who was the brother of George Jackson, who she was trying to spring from
prison.
You're
getting into some esoteric stuff.
It's not esoteric. It shows
it's unrelated to the rally today. Let me give you an example. So this guy, Joey Gibson, the Patriot Prayer guy, right? So they're going to have this rally. Oh, it's so peaceful, and we don't want any bad guys. He had a rally in Portland on April 29th. Joey Gibson, same guy, has his rally in Portland April 29th. There was a guy there who brought a baseball bat, spouted racist slurs and Nazi salutes. The guy's name was Jeremy Christian. A month later, Jeremy Christian stabbed two men to death on a Portland commuter train.
Oh my gosh!
After the defense
right.
of two young women, one wearing a hijab. Do you? No. Here's the thing. I'm not going to play the game.
No, play the game.
I challenge you. I dare you right now.
Play the game.
Let me finish.
I got a big surprise.
I
got to
finish.
Garland. Come on, bring it.
I've got to finish.
Play the game. No, no.
Ask the question you were going to ask.
Ask it right
let
now.
Let me finish.
Ask the question.
Let me finish.
Ask the question.
I'm trying to finish now. We're just killing time now.
No, I'm not. Ask the question.
We're killing time on a radio show. We got to get something accomplished here. Okay. I'm not going to play the game of seeing that some guy stabbed two innocent people to death.
Yeah.
And then I have to ask another human being.
Keep going.
Do you condemn that? See, that's a game I
don't
play.
I wouldn't be sitting in the room. Ask me the question.
With someone.
Ask me the question.
Let me finish. I wouldn't be sitting in the room. With
Ask
someone
me the question, Garland.
Who didn't condemn it. If I thought you thought, well, that's fine, I would be sitting in a room with you.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question, Garland.
They stabbed
did
two
the people
together.
At the did the people at you know what you claimed, I'm gonna point out that you're being dishonest.
You're welcome to your opinion.
I let you talk, let me talk. You're claiming
you didn't let me talk. You kept talking over me. It took me 5 minutes to get you to shut up.
Because I wanted you to ask me the question.
You admitted that you talked over me then.
It doesn't make any difference. You refused to ask me the question because here's the surprise you got coming. You claimed that this guy was at the rally. Was he invited to the rally?
I don't know if he was invited to the rally.
No, I know the answer. Let me give you the answer. He was not invited. Furthermore,
but he was there.
Let me answer.
He didn't have to be invited.
Yes. Now, furthermore,
he was there with his brethren.
You're a liar.
Oh, no,
you're a
I'm
liar.
Not.
I'll show you the video. In fact, I will show you the video of where this guy who stabbed the people was getting yelled at the rally, and they were saying, get out of here. That's the surprise,
Garland. Well, he got out of there, all right.
No, he did because he was. You just lied and said he was their brethren.
He was there. Yeah, he was. He was attracted.
Do you want me to show you the video,
my friend?
Do you want me to show you the video?
Why do bees come to honey?
Do you want me to show you the video?
And why would a madman come to a rally with these guys? Because he sees them as their as his brother.
No,
it's obviously.
Do you want me to
see? They're being slick.
No, they're not being
cute.
Slick. They're yelling at him. Do you want me to show you the video or not? Anybody in the world? Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do, Garland. I'm going to go up to Populist TV.
Talking about how nice and sweet they are.
I can put this up. On Populous TV
the,
later.
Why are all the alt-right guys coming into their rally?
On
why
Populous TV, I'm
going to
put up
them.
The video showing that this guy who stabbed the people was getting yelled at and screamed at, and lying liberals tried to make it out like he has something to do with that. He has nothing to do with it. Now, you can't
cute.
Show me where the Antifa people ever get yelled at
being,
and kicked out of these rallies.
They're being cute. They're
you just called
like
them
their
brethren.
That they
you just
yes,
called them their brethren, Garland. You just did that.
They are.
No, they're not.
Right
says who? Says you?
Thing. Yes, says
you?
Yes.
You're completely wrong. And I will show you, and everybody will be able to look, and I'll find the video. It was sent to me by a guy who was there.
That's fine. But
they
he was
rejected
there.
Him at the time.
But
they didn't wait. They didn't know he was going to stab
here's what
anybody.
I guarantee you.
They didn't
okay.
want him
so,
there.
So you're telling me tomorrow, when these nice gentlemen have their rally, that a bunch of far-right guys and Nazis aren't going to show up? Of course they're going to show up. Why are they going to show up, Lee?
Why would they show up?
Why would they show up?
Well,
that's a good question.
Why would they show up?
Why is
I'll
it,
tell you why they show up. Because the commies
why
who
is
are going to be out there trying to bust these people's heads,
everything
who you will not
why
condemn,
is it
condemn the commies
everywhere
condemn
Joey
Antifa
shows
right
up.
Now.
Why
condemn
is it,
them,
huh?
Garland.
Why is it everywhere that he shows up, mysteriously the Nazis are like, hey,
no,
I think
it's
we'll
not
be there
everywhere.
Too.
You're making that up,
I'm
Garland.
Not making that up.
I'm going to put the video up and everyone
well, then,
will be able to see
then the
that
Nazis,
when you call them the
they're
brethren,
not going to be there tomorrow. I guarantee
you
they'll be there tomorrow.
You're just being dishonest
they're
about
still going to be there tomorrow, Lee, and they're going to make my
I
point.
No, they're not going to make your point.
Yes, they are. They're going to make my point. Why wouldn't they show up? They'll be there. Guaranteed.
Why would they be there?
Ask them. We will be back in round three. We got plenty to talk about. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back. Third and final round of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, the most disruptive radio show in America. I managed, Garland, I will say this. I did not beat my head against the table in the last segment, so I'm proud of myself for that.
That was good. Usually when we have those kind of segments, you end up with like a big red spot on your forehead.
Yes, it looks like Ash Wednesday. Now, here's the thing. If you don't catch the show live, there are a number of ways you can subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also go to Spreaker. You can also check us out on the Sputnik website and the app. The app is a great way to listen to the show. Do us a favor. Please tell your friends. Please tell your neighbors to listen to the show. Because, again, I think we're doing something unique. We're not the typical show where it's just two people screaming at each, wait a minute.
Yeah, we kind of are. Well, no, actually, and I'm going to break away for 1 second to say that. You know, we have our segments every now and then where we yell at each other and we scream and we throw papers and things like that, right? But I feel good about that for this reason, because if you turn on CNN, you'll never, you know, how often? It's very, very rare that you turn on CNN or MSNBC. Generally, it's a kumbaya thing, you know, Fox, whatever. There's people kind of sitting around disagreeing with each other. You don't get the element of people saying, you're wrong, no, you're wrong, and screaming and yelling and stuff like that. That's the problem with the mainstream media. There's too much agreeing. And I think it's a good thing.
Well, here's the
to
thing,
disagree.
Too. Here's the thing. If you and I get heated, it usually, we've never had a whole show. I remember shows like Crossfire.
Yeah.
It would just be like our last segment, like the last 5 minutes of our last segment for the whole show. And instead, you know, when we had John Kiriakou on yesterday, for instance, every time John's on, but even during other segments, I think we go deeper into material than other people do. And, you know, we agree a larger percentage of the time than people would expect for two people with different views. But anyway, so in the last segment of the week, which we're at right now, by the way, everyone who's listening, Garland, you should know, most days, Monday through Thursday, Garland is out of here like Lojo. As soon as the show is over, boom, he is out here. He's hitting the train. Now, you would think Friday afternoon, soon as the show's over, Garland yells, yabba dabba doo, and like runs out. No, au contraire. That's because Garland's got another show he does after this.
Yeah, over on Pacifica at 6. I'm over in
There we go. So you can listen if you want more Garland tonight.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Who doesn't want more Garland? I'm over at 6 p.m. on
Pacifica
and
6 p.m. But,
DC, yeah.
But that's what's funny.
And also on my Facebook feed. I do a Facebook Live on that. But.
And I do Periscopes and blah, 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 blah. And so people, we're out here. But it's just funny. Monday through Thursday, Garland is boom. He's out of here. And then on Friday, where you'd think, boom. No,
everybody else is running, and I'm the one walking.
That's exactly
on Friday.
Right.
Everybody whizzes by me as I slowly, you know, gallivant out the door.
So on this last segment, and by the way, we do have big, I'm just going to tease you again. We do have big, right, Garland? See, Garland and I, here's the trick. Garland and I know what the news is. And so when we say it's a big deal, it's a big honking deal, right? Right, Garland?
Yeah, I mean, as Joe Biden kind of said, to paraphrase Joe Biden. It's a big friggin' deal. How's that?
So, yeah. So let's talk about a couple of stories that we like to talk about that we think the media buries. One of them I want to talk about is this Owan Brothers scandal. Now, the interesting part of this, I saw this video last night. Representative Yvette Clark out of New York was doing a press conference. And she was the Democratic representative who signed away $120,000 worth of missing computer equipment. Now, that's these Owan brothers, they're Pakistani, right? They were making huge amounts of money doing IT work on the Hill. Their wives were doing IT work on the Hill.
Brother, there was a whole family. There was four or five of them,
yes,
actually. And they were all doing IT work on the Hill. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, one of them was working for her, but they were working for a number of people who were Democrats on the Hill. And they were found to be involved in all kinds of tomfoolery, including basically buying computer equipment, apparently, and it went missing. All
That's
kinds
right.
of things like
and
that.
And iPads and stuff like
and,
that.
And it was found. The thing that I find interesting, really, the thing that I find the most interesting is that the Imran Awan was found to have had Debbie Wasserman Schultz's username and password.
Yes.
Apparently.
And Nancy Pelosi's,
yes,
too. That came out in the WikiLeaks.
During the period of time when the alleged hacks, leaks, whatever they were, happened at the DNC server. And it certainly leads one to wonder whether or not this guy could have been involved. He could have gotten stuff. Certainly, if you got the password. So that's the thing that I've always found very...
Well, because I agree with that as a question, but let's talk about what we absolutely know. So Imran Awan was arrested a few weeks ago. And here's what I know about this. The mainstream media is not talking about this story.
Very little.
And if it were a Republican, and if it were Trump, let's say, they would be talking about this nonstop, day in and day out. There'd be hearings and everything else. So what we know for sure is that they had equipment that apparently went missing. Imran Awan has been investigated and subsequently facing charges, federal charges, for bank fraud. Now, so Yvette Clark had signed off on this missing equipment so it would not be caught in an audit. So a reporter from the Daily Caller, and by the way, the guy Luke Rosiak has done great work on this over there. Another reporter, a female reporter from the Daily Caller, asked Yvette Clark a question about it. Now, I urge people to look up, just if you type in Owan Brothers Clark, which is Clark with an E, Clarky, right? Like Stanley Clark, the great jazz
You're right,
bassist.
There you go. Put an E on the end of Clark.
What's that?
Said put an E on the E of Clark. It works.
There we go. So she was asked about this, and her response is the most guilty thing I've ever seen, which is she immediately ducks the question, puts her hands up in front of the camera. Then two of her aides come up to block the person asking the question.
What I think is
there. Does that seem a little guilty?
Well, there's a couple things going on here with that. And the other part of it is that, so apparently they were paid an inordinate amount, even for an IT contractor.
The Owan brothers,
yeah,
not the
Owan brothers,
aides.
Yeah, they were paid an inordinate amount of money. And then it was found that Imran Awan continued to be paid even after there was an investigation going on.
After we were talking about it on this show.
Yeah, I thought he was gone. But there was an investigation going on into the activities of these of this family. Apparently his wife had beat feet for, had been caught at the airport with 12,000, 10 or 12 grand cash, beat feet for Pakistan. And finally he started to, he sent $280,000 to Pakistan. He went to run behind it and he got nabbed at the airport and he was continued to pay. They were continued to pay him all the way up until the time, where he was nabbed by the FBI. And I think one of the reasons that Yvette Clark would be running is this. I think there's going to be a significant inquiry into why was this guy being paid this much? Why was the family being paid this much? By whom? What was going on? And I think there are a lot of people who feel that they're in the crosshairs, could end up in the crosshairs of an investigation. So I think that that's something that I'm going to keep an eye on, that Awan Brothers scandal, because we don't have any answers yet. But, you know, there's some very significant questions here that I think are going to be answered eventually by an investigation. Now that we know that the FBI's, see, initially there was an investigation by just the Capitol Police Department, which right. is a fair, relatively small investigation. If you talk about a police department, look, because I've worked for a police department, that's a whole different animal than what the FBI is able to do.
And the fact is, there's so many questions raised by this, but to me, the number one question is why hasn't the media, this is not a speculation scandal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words, there's people, and at very least, they seem to have taken stuff. They're innocent until proven guilty. Let's just say that. But at very least, they've been accused of taking stuff. They've been accused. And why were they on the payroll? Why are these Democrats not talking? See, that's the thing that strikes me, Garland. When I covered, the first story I covered as a journalist was the John Edwards story. So after he got caught coming out of the hotel room and hid, I was suspicious. But then, like 2 days later, he did a press conference. Now, after the press conference, and the press conference was him making a statement about something, not about the affair. He was at a hotel. He then ran out the back door and snuck out the kitchen.
Right.
Now, I said at the time that I found that to be suspicious.
Most people would. Well, here's the other question I have, too, with that going on. So I find it to be Imran Awan brothers to be issue to be of note, remarkable, shall we say, as doctors would say in their reports.
Yeah.
The House has said that they're going to, they've said there needs to be an inquiry. What in the world's going on? I can't say the word inquiry.
Inquiry.
And I'm wondering at what point the House of Representatives, are they going to? I haven't read anything about them. And if the, you know, there's something to always keep in mind that I'm always suspicious of, right? And that is, a lot of times when you talk about the Senate and the House, when you talk about Congress, you'll see something happen on one side of the aisle and the people on the other side of the aisle don't look into it. And you ask yourself why. You know, it's like this protective kind of Article 5 thing. If you go after one, you go after all of them. And I'm wondering, you know, while some people in the House have called for inquiries and investigations, I haven't heard anything about Ryan or anyone else saying we're going to put together a committee. You know, they're doing, like, they're investigating Russiagate. They're investigating all kinds of things. Why aren't, you know what I'm saying? You got to ask yourself, you know, are they going to? Are they? I don't know. It becomes a question, you know, maybe you certainly can't say it's because the FBI's investigating because that's what's going on with Russiagate. So I'm wondering, you know, what happens with this?
Well, here's the thing. So when I searched the New York Times for Imran Awan, how many stories do you think I find on this?
Very few.
One. That's right. What I'm finding. Now, here's the headline. I just want to, I point this out to make sure you understand how people lie. I'm going to read the headline and the lead paragraph. The headline is, Trump fuels intrigue. Trump, see, they make it about Trump. Trump fuels intrigue surrounding a former IT worker's arrest. So immediately, it's not IT worker with close ties to Democrats arrested, right? That's not the headline. That, by the way, should be the headline, because that's what happened. And here's the paragraph. Ready? Here's the first paragraph. For months, conservative news outlets have built a case against Imran Awan, his wife, two brothers, and a friend, piece by piece. Then it says, to hear some conservatives tell it, dot, dot, dot. Now, let me just stop right there.
That's a pretty dishonest story.
What?
That's a pretty dishonest story. And that's why I'm like no fan of the New York Times or the Washington Post.
And what's the framing of that? The framing of it, if you're a New York Times reader, what they're literally telling you is, no, this is, don't worry about this. It's just some conservatives talking about it. Who cares? It's just some conservatives. They're building it piece by piece. To hear some conservatives tell it, that is inherently propaganda. What you're hearing there is propaganda. They're poisoning the well. So you as a New York Times reader, most New York Times readers are going to immediately do what? Their brains are going to go, okay, I don't need to worry about this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you know, that's why I'm, you know, when I look at, you know, the question I have is why would the sixth richest man in the world worth $75 billion, Carlos Slim, buy the majority stake in the New York Times? And why would the richest, first, or depending on what hour it is, the richest or second richest in the man in the world, Jeff Bezos, buy the Washington Post? But then again, I said, I have to get back to Paul Ryan and I have to get back to the people in charge who are Republicans in charge of the House and say, no one can stop Paul Ryan. No one can stop. I forgot the guy in charge of the House Judiciary Committee. So if they're not doing an internal investigation, which a number of people have called for, I got to say, you know, you can't blame. I mean, look, the Washington Post is going to do what they're going to do and the New York Times is going to do what they're going to do. But the people who are in charge have the opportunity to go after this thing. Whether they will, I don't know. But if they don't go after it, you got to ask them. Why aren't you going after it?
Here's the Washington Post. There's about three or four stories that affect this. One of them is titled, I'm just going to read the title, "The Story of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Indicted IT Staffer That's Lighting Up the Right, Explained." Second story is, "Not Taking a Vacation on Twitter, Trump Author's Thoughts on Sessions the UN and His Time in Jersey." So there's no real reporting on this.
No.
The reporting is all the New York Times. And this is why I say, I'm going to say this again. You mother Hubbards at the, by the way, I said Hubbards, don't. Stop, Saul. Our engineer Saul is very nervous. These mother Hubbards at the New York Times and the Washington Post, you sucker MCs, listen to me. I dare you. I double dare you. Come in and sit in this chair right over here and answer some questions about your biased coverage. Ellen Nakashima, come on in.
Well, here's the...
Any of you.
Here's the thing. You can go to
any
them
of you cowards.
And I could predict as a Bernie supporter, if it's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I mean, look what they did through the election. You know what
right.
I mean? Look what they did through the election.
Right.
And that is, once they get people who are their chosen, you know, kind of establishment people, their chosen people that they feel should stay in charge and they don't want to hurt or they're going to help, then, you know, we had instances of them literally of people sending stories to the Clinton campaign
right
before they went to their editor. So at that point, as a person who's a Bernie supporter, I read the New York Times and the Washington Post, like for the sports section or the Metro section or something like that. But as far as what's in there, and that's why I tell everyone, look, your best bet is to go online. Your best bet is to do research. Your best bet, if you find a story, and I'm not saying discount every story in the Washington Post or New York Times. If you read a story and you say, well, that's interesting.
I'm a paid subscriber to both of them, Garland.
If you find a story in wherever, your best bet is to go online and start Googling and find various other stories and other sources and start to compare them and see what you find and build your own way of doing. Because to me, that's the only way you're going to get the information. You got to find stuff overseas. Look, you may think that Sputnik is whatever, that's not the place. Sputnik has its own news agency. Read that too. You can discount it if you don't like it or whatever. But in this day and age, more than ever, because the fairness doctrine was done away with under Ronald Reagan, because the telecom bill was signed under Bill Clinton, because we've had a bipartisan, there was a bipartisan agreement that the news media should be unfair. And now what we're left with is kind of corporate propaganda most of the time. If you really want the truth, you're going to have to find it yourself, because you're not going to go to one place and get the truth. You're going to have to search for it. That's what I do. And even we disagree, because most people want now, unfortunately, Lee? They want confirmation bias. And that is rising, bringing the rise of the bipartisanreport.coms and the Palmer reports and the different places that simply say people want confirmation bias, and they write these sensationalized headlines, and it's really clickbait. and you end up getting, you know, some kind of malware downloaded on your computer.
Well, but here's the danger. Here's the danger I've got to say in what the New York Times and the Washington Post does. Noam Chomsky, guy who I don't agree with on a lot of stuff, said the New York Times sets the editorial page for the rest of the world. And he's right. If the New York Times covers something, you as an editor for any other publication know it's quote unquote safe. Does that make sense? Because you can't get yelled at.
Used to be a time when that was true.
Right.
That's what they want people to believe.
No, but it's true. No, I'm telling you, because I've worked for right-wing publications. Breitbart has not covered the Ukraine DNC story. Do you know why? Because Alex Marlin, who's the editor over there, is afraid. He wants to fit in with the establishment. If the New York Times is talking about something, it becomes a story. I mean, let me give an example.
You know what I call the AP? You know what remember what my nickname for the AP is?
Yes.
Associated Press? Approved Premise.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
And it's like, this is, you know, example is, before the night before the primary between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, the AP called it. They called the race the night before the state with the most number of delegates.
Right.
They said, oh,
right,
this thing's over. And I'm like, but the most number of delegates is tomorrow. And ever since then. And then everyone else said, oh, well, this thing is over. At that point, it started to dawn on me that there are people out here who have a mission. They've got an agenda. They're going to send whatever that agenda is out. And everybody's going to say, well, that's the approved premise for the day. And I'm down with that.
And unfortunately, this is why I was defending InfoWars before, because I got to say, they're more independent than a lot of other sites. Now, that doesn't mean they get stories right all the time. I don't defend all their reporting, and they do get things wrong. But because they're more independent, that's why I was defending them.
There's nothing wrong with somebody reading it. I think it's a bunch of hooey. But read it if you want to. Read it all and make your own decision.
Yeah, and a lot of it, by the way, especially if I'm on InfoWars, as I was earlier this week.
Then it should be totally, thoroughly disregarded.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Lee.
Oh, it was so nice up until right then. Okay, there you go, everybody. That ends another week of Fault Lines. We will be back next week, maybe, with a big story. You listen to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.